I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, what's happening in Washington State around the use of the flock camera system is a perfect example of how stupid ideas driven by radical ideology catch fire and ultimately could kill people. Plus, Seattle's election results don't make a lot of sense. I'll explain. And a fight over illegal food carts in Seattle is really a story about government overregulation. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I think we're going to end Brandi's week of struggle with a bang. Of course, I've been sick all week and still am a little bit sick, but feeling much better. And so we have almost made it. Look, we have a ton of good stories today. Very excited to really highlight almost every single thing wrong with America in just a single hour, and a lot of it happening right here on the West Coast. So sometimes virtue signaling is harmless, right? It's like, oh, you know, virtue signal makes me feel good about myself, but it doesn't really do damage to other people. But sometimes virtue signaling is quite literally dangerous and deadly. And this is a perfect example of that. So going back a couple months, we've been talking about totally manufactured controversies around the flock camera system. So the first time we brought this up was when the city of Auburn, which if you're not familiar is south of Seattle, on October 21st came out and said it was going to suspend its use of the flock system. And this is basically like an automated camera system, license plate reader that helps local law enforcement agencies fight crime. It's really a great supplement for, especially in a state like Washington, departments that are low on officers. You got this camera system that can do a lot of the difficult work for you. So the city of Auburn came out and said its police department did not knowingly allow federal immigration enforcement agencies to access the city's flock camera system. But there was a report that came out that said U.S. Border Patrol had gained entry through a national data sharing feature. According to Auburn officials, the access occurred through Flock's national lookup tool, which allows agencies across the country to share license plate data. The city said it immediately turned off the feature once it became aware that it could have allowed unintended federal access. So, you know, we're in this heated political climate. We're in a very blue state, very blue area of the state. And so Auburn has this flock camera system. Turns out Border Patrol had accessed it a couple times because they had the feature turned on where other agencies couldn't come in and access information. So as a result, they turned it off. And that decision on October 21st came less than 2 months after the Auburn Police Department was out talking in the news about how useful the flock system had been in helping them fight crime. This was an article from King 5 News that was published August 29th. Auburn's license plate reading cameras already a, quote, huge help to detectives, police say. The department had installed 20 cameras built by Flock Safety to help solve and reduce crime. So August 29th, oh my gosh, this camera system is so great. We're solving and reducing crime, A+. 2 months later, oh my God, Border Patrol used it a couple times. It's time to freak out and panic. And that freak out and panic is contagious. And what I'm going to illustrate for you is an example of how virtue signaling over something like the lawful enforcement of our nation's immigration laws can actually have a profound impact on public safety right here in our communities. So as all of this is happening, and I just feel the need to reiterate the importance of this flock camera system and how it is being used, this is really important, it is being used to do the exact thing that Democrats have wanted police departments to do. Be more hands-off with criminals. Use less force. Not engage in high-speed pursuits. This state went through a years-long battle over high-speed police pursuits. Democrats passed a law saying, we don't want police engaged in high-speed pursuits. What happened? It led to like this massive uptick in stolen vehicles, other violent crime, because people flee law enforcement when they're fleeing from violent crime. It was a whole huge mess. They rolled it back a little bit. But now you have these technologies like drones and the flock camera system that can not only help low-staffed police departments by acting as, you know, a set of eyes out there on the road, But they can also take police a little further out of a situation so crime can be resolved without high-speed pursuits, without the need so often for police force. And that happened just this week in Puyallup. Puyallup Police Department had just put out this video saying that the Flock camera system, in combination with a drone that they have, helped them locate, pursue, and ultimately arrest a suspect in a stolen vehicle without having to engage in a high-speed chase. Again, the very thing that Democrats have been calling for. They used Flock and the drone to take a suspect into custody using limited force, limited danger to the community. And this is a guy who stole one car. Then he crashed it, tried to steal another car that had two kids in it. So that's great, right? Everyone should celebrate that. Not only did they not have to engage in high-speed pursuit, got eyes on this person, Flock system helped him identify the license plate of the stolen vehicle, send in the drone, track him, able to arrest him. And this is a dangerous dude. He's not just stealing cars and taking them for joyrides. This is a dude who tried to steal a vehicle with two kids in it. So that is the value of the Flock camera system. But of course, virtue signaling comes first, above all other considerations. So all of that backdrop takes me to the city of Redmond. So on Monday, there were three instances allegedly involving immigration enforcement in the city of Redmond. The city put out on X, the Redmond Police Department is aware of three instances of immigration and customs enforcement activity that occurred within the city of Redmond on Monday, November 3rd. The police department was not informed in advance of these operations, and the department does not participate in or cooperate with immigration-related enforcement actions. Upon becoming aware of the activity, Redmond police officers verified the authenticity of the law enforcement agents involved and confirmed they were federal agents. Once verified, Redmond police had no further involvement. So they put this out, but of course, virtue signaling. This triggered people who are angry about ICE and immigration efforts. And in Redmond, you have a city council that has gone very far to the left. So they summoned the chief of police for the Redmond Police Department to come before the city council and, I don't know, like answer for immigration agents being lawfully in the city carrying out immigration efforts. But one of the things that came up is the fact that the city of Redmond uses this Flock camera system. And apparently these city council members were familiar with some of the other headlines that resulted from virtue signaling and fear mongering over, oh my gosh, maybe the Flock camera system is going to be used by ICE. And so one of the council women asked the chief of police, okay, well, are you guys allowing ICE to use, you might not be on the ground helping them, your officers, with federal immigration enforcement, but are you allowing them to access our Flock database?
Was any of the data from our systems used in these contacts?
Absolutely not. None of our data has been received by any outside entity.
End of story, right? Okay, great. No, of course not. They decided to shut down the Flock system in Redmond anyway, at least temporarily, while they look into it further. Because of what? This is the city of Redmond put this out. After a recommendation from City Council on November 3rd, the Redmond Police Department has suspended operation of its automated license plate reader system, also known as the Flock cameras. Access to the system has disabled pending further review by the council. So not just, I don't know, disabled for, or you tell Border Patrol, whatever it is, hey, you can't use our system. No, disabled across the city. And this is a city that has been having a startling rise in crime per capita. They have a higher than average, the national average, crime rate in the city of Redmond. Like many areas in our state, we have the lowest number of police officers per capita. These cameras are helpful. The chief of police stood in front of the city council and said, no, there's no instances of federal agents using these systems to be able to carry out federal immigration enforcement. But they said, nah, we don't care because virtue signal it. We want a virtue signal to our community. And Nicole was watching this meeting. And this is probably one of the most unhinged things you'll see on the internet today. So there's a city council member, I'm going to butcher her name, but Angela Nueva Casima. And she was, again, questioning the chief of police about his non-helping ICE. They're clearly, it's a sanctuary state. Police can't help ICE. They don't help ICE. Their system isn't being used to help ICE. But this council member has to take things a step further. And she's basically demanding to know, well, if the chief of police, not only it's not enough for you to not help ICE, We want you to actively hinder ICE. And if you don't do it, then citizens should do it. This is a startling exchange. Watch.
While your department will not do anything to cooperate with ICE, there's also nothing that your department can do to intervene.
Correct. They are operating under federal law and federal authority, and federal law and authority supersedes that of a local jurisdiction. So we would not be able to interfere or intervene in their particular operations.
Now, we've seen in other communities where it's been the community then taking it upon themselves to essentially fight back against ICE in their communities. So basically what we're letting our community know is, hey, from a city perspective, we really can't do anything, and it's upon you then to stand up and fight back against ICE in our communities.
I can't support or advocate for that. We are here to keep the peace. Individuals have a right to, conduct themselves in the manner they see fit, but we cannot support or advocate for, violence or, fighting against federal agents. Our role is to keep the peace.
But the peace has already been broken, Chief.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's the mindset we're working with, where you'd have a city council member in a city that's dealing with an uptick in crime. And her concern is that the police force, the local police force, is used. She wants them to interfere with federal immigration efforts. And if they don't, she's basically warning the chief, then the citizens are going to step in and do it for you. Paging the Department of Justice, as one of our viewers wrote, are you flocking kidding me over this whole situation? And it's laughable, but it's also dangerous. The example I just gave of what happened in Puyallup. I mean, textbook what Democrats have been asking police to do. But now, because there are a couple cities that are saying this flock camera system could maybe be utilized by the feds, what do you think's going to happen? It's going to start to be turned off city by city by city, because that's what happens. That's how stupidity snowballs. We've seen it many times before, the police defunding movement. One random activist brings it up, defund the police, creates a slogan, and then all of a sudden, city by city by city, state by state, the idea begins to be mainstream because so many people have said it, so we must say it too, because we want to prove that we're woker than the next city over. The city of Redmond has no legitimate cause or concern about the flock camera system being utilized by immigration agents, but they were triggered by the presence of immigration agents in their community, so they want to look like they're doing something and being tough on Donald Trump. So they turn off a camera system that their police department is using actively to help keep citizens safe. They're punishing citizens because of their TDS. That's really what it is at the end of the day. Imagine in Puyallup, if the city of Puyallup didn't have the flock system. Well, a couple things would have happened. They probably wouldn't have identified, using that system and the automated cameras, the stolen vehicle that was fleeing. So wouldn't have even sent up a drone in the first place. And that individual, once he crashed his car, would have been able to be free to go on and steal another vehicle. Remember, he tried to steal a vehicle with kids in it. Maybe those kids would be dead. Maybe he would have killed people that night. Also, these local city councils can virtue signal their dislike for Donald Trump. So you will hurt your communities. You would be, literally, you're okay if people die. I've said this a million times about so many different facets of how Democrats fight back against Donald Trump. Like, they'll do it, even if it means their own citizens and constituents die as a result. It is so wild. It is the snowballing of stupidity. And we're going to see this happen with more police departments, more cities, without any cause at all. And to eliminate the entire system. And in some of these areas like Auburn has a severe crime issue. They have a severe gang violence issue. But it's like, well, we'll let people shoot each other and die, and these young black men shoot each other and die. So to show people that we won't cooperate with Donald Trump. It's the most insane thing. Stop voting for these people. Stop voting for people who would watch you die, who would let criminals kill you, to virtue signal over the occupant of the White House. All right, I want to do a quick follow-up on election results. Because, of course, prior to Election Day, really nationally, everybody's eyes were on a few different races involving socialists. So we know how the socialist race turned out in New York City. Mamdani is going to be the next mayor. Didn't happen, thankfully. The city of Minneapolis was wise enough. Although it's crazy that I have to sit here and again celebrate the reelection of the mayor in Minneapolis, who was like kneeling in front of the golden casket of George Floyd and watched his city burn again to virtue signal. But the alternative socialist was even worse. And so what's going to happen in the city of Seattle? That was the other trifecta of socialism we were sort of monitoring. The answer is still, I'm not sure. And that's not unusual. Unfortunately, in Washington state, our mail-in system and the counting, this goes on for days and days and days. But the results as they stand right now are very odd to me. They don't make any sense. So Bruce Harrell, the incumbent, he's got 54% of the vote. And Katie Wilson, the socialist, has 46% of the vote. So Bruce Harrell at the second ballot drop yesterday. So, of course, you have the initial ballot drop Tuesday evening, election night. And then you don't get another one until the following afternoon. So that happened yesterday about 4 p.m. And Bruce Harrell actually gained ground, which, if you know anything about Seattle elections, is totally weird, because on election night, he had about a 7% lead. And everyone in political circles, including me, people who watch this stuff, who've covered elections in our state for a long time, know that socialists surge so heavy in Seattle in late ballot counting. So we're all like, oh, he lost. I was almost convinced Tuesday night that Bruce Harrell was and will lose this election, because we saw Shama Sawant as the last example of a socialist who came back from a double-digit deficit. And I think on the fourth or fifth day of ballot counting, ended up being victorious. So it was really weird to go from Tuesday night to Wednesday night and to see Bruce Harrell actually expand his lead. Now, there's going to be another major drop of ballots today around 4 p.m., and that could absolutely shift things. But one of the reasons this makes no sense to me is when you compare it to some of the other races where there is this dynamic of Democrat, progressive, Democrat, socialist, Democrat, Democratic socialist. Because usually you'd see these all sort of behave in the same way. So, and these are two citywide races, and that's also very important, because you can't really compare individual district races to a citywide voting population. But Seattle City Attorney, this is a citywide race. The candidate that's much further to the left, Erica Evans, is clobbering Ann Davison. I mean, that's a horrible result for Ann Davison, and I have my thoughts on why she lost so badly. But Erica Evans had 62%. Again, so you're comparing two citywide races, both where crime is a pretty significant underlying theme, and the one considered more pro-police, again, I use that so loosely, but more moderate, Bruce Harrell, is winning in the mayor's race. But then Ann Davison is losing so badly in the city attorney's race. Now, you might say, well, Brandy, that's because Ann Davison is a Republican. And so, you know, Bruce isn't. And people hate Donald Trump. So you can't really compare Ann to Bruce and the results. Okay, let's do another one. City Council Position 9. Sarah Nelson. And this is, so Sarah Nelson is the president of the Seattle City Council. Nicole, can you Google this quick? I think that that's a citywide race, correct?
Yes, I believe it is.
Yeah. It's one of two citywide seats. So again, I just wanted to make sure that I'm comparing apples to apples. So City Council Position 9, Sarah Nelson is the current council president. This is a citywide race. So voters across the entire city, same with the other two, are voting for this. Sarah Nelson is the more moderate. She's being pummeled by Dianne Foster. And Sarah Nelson isn't a Republican. Sarah Nelson, very similar, I think, politically to Bruce Harrell. Why is she losing and Bruce Harrell is winning? It makes no sense. What we've seen, and I've covered multiple election cycles for the city of Seattle, you get this back and forth, and it's all, you know, different shades of blue, basically. But, you know, just 4 years ago, it was like, oh, all the moderates. It was like a sweep for the moderates. And then 4 years before that, it's like, oh, all the crazies. They kind of go back and forth. These results make no sense. If, and I have to believe, now, when you look at your ballot, it's nonpartisan. So people look at it and they don't see socialist, Democrat, Republican. Ann Davison's not on the ballot as a Republican. So it takes an informed voter to be able to actually go in and make individual decisions. So some of this you could chalk it up to uninformed voters who are just like, I don't know, what name looks familiar or whatever it is, right? But if there's some revolt against incumbents, this doesn't make sense. The Bruce Herald results doesn't make sense. So here's what I will chalk it up to. Honest to God, Nicole might be thinking the same thing. If Katie Wilson loses, we all are going to send thank you letters to KUOW. That has to be it. It's the only thing that makes sense. So KUOW, super leftist NPR station in Seattle, in the weeks leading up to the election, right as ballots were coming out, they dropped this interview. And I don't know if they fully intended to make this so bad for Katie Wilson, but they dropped that interview where she's revealed as this interloper, nepo baby, you know, Oxford dropout, totally in contrast with the public image that she's been putting forth. That went crazy viral. I mean, we shared it. I think it got a couple million views, which social media isn't real life. But in a race where the difference is like 10,000 votes, a couple million impressions on social media exposing her as a nepo baby to New York academics and authors who doesn't even know, can't even say how much money she gets from her parents, that absolutely could be the difference. So, I mean, the left is going to lose it on KUOW if Katie Wilson loses. Tell me if you can think of another reason.
No, I actually think, I don't know if it was that or if people were already aware. I think that brought it to light.
I don't think people knew she was a nepo baby to that extent.
Well, yeah, the nepo baby thing, but also that she, the lack of, like we talked about on the show, but the lack of any experience, yeah. any experience whatsoever. Like both of those other two candidates that won city attorney and city council both have some background in actual work.
Yeah.
And I think people voted for people that work.
But it didn't not New York. I mean, for Mamdani, it was fine. But I think that's because it came out so long ago about Mamdani being, you know, a wannabe rapper mom who, you know, worked with mommy for a couple months, that he was able to come out, counter that narrative with his, you know, charisma. Katie had no charisma to counter the narrative. None, not an ounce of charisma. And it came out at this really inopportune time for her as people were literally getting the ballots in their hand. So, I mean, KUOW.
And the cover-up wasn't good.
The cover-up was terrible.
The reaction was terrible. Her mom saying, what? Just me paying for my little Josie to go to daycare? 100%.
So,
no, you have a husband that refuses to work and you live. No.
I know. So that definitely shows the power that actual reporting can have. I'm very critical of the media. I don't think KUOW necessarily did this knowing how bad it would be for Katie Wilson. I'm sure the lefties will lose their mind on KUOW and revolt and call for a boycott. But at the end of the day, they were just doing an interview with her. She admitted that she gets a ton of money from her parents and it went viral. So sometimes things going viral really can influence an election, because I see no other cause besides that for the results to be as they are in these other races and to not be like that in the race for mayor. Now, all that being said,
One other thing I saw was that the age range and some of the voting was it was a much higher age range, the turnout. And so that would also explain that, right? So,
but it those wouldn't people explain would the difference.
Care, no, those people that would actually care about those things, right? Yeah. Because the younger people might not care.
Who might care about experience and stuff.
They might care about experience, might care that her parents are giving her all her money. And yeah, I think that probably contributed a lot.
Yeah, we shall see. But it's just wild. And I think, I mean, I'm not saying for sure, nobody's called the race for Bruce Herald. Today's drop could be much different for him, but he's sitting in a pretty good place and it's much different than the other races. And so I thought I'd talk about that and just point out that it makes no sense if not for, I think, that late October surprise. There's a reason there's a phrase for it. October surprise that caught on about Katie Wilson and all of you sharing it and getting attention to it might have save the city just a little bit. Bruce Herald's still a hot mess, absolutely, but he's not Katie Wilson. All right, coming up next, the Department of Justice says it is going to sue the state of Washington now over its refusal to provide voter data. It's an issue we talked with the Secretary of State about just on Monday, so we'll discuss where that is going to go. First, if you are trying to save some money for your family, I mean, who couldn't use some extra cash, especially this time of year? Highly recommend you taking the First Mark Challenge, and they could be saving you almost immediately hundreds of dollars, if not thousands of dollars a year. And that really adds up. We hear from so many undivided viewers and listeners who say, hey, I'm saving $300 a month. I'm saving $4,000 a year just by making that call to take the First Mark Challenge. And the best part is they also have insurance that fits their needs and that's going to cover them in the event that something unthinkable happens. And you need that both. It's not enough just to get cheap insurance from someone. You can go on the internet and do that if that's all you want. But having someone who's tailoring insurance to your family's needs, making sure you're not paying for anything you don't need, and that you've got good insurance to cover everything you work so hard for while getting you the best price, I mean, that just sells itself. And doesn't even sell itself because you never have to pay for Firstmark's services. Firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. All right. So on September 8th, the Department of Justice, we covered it at the time, the Civil Rights Division, sent out a letter to multiple blue states. And I think there were some red states as well that immediately complied, but the blue states have been a little slower to comply. The subject line was request for complete Washington voter registration list with all fields. So this was this letter was addressed to Washington Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, a Democrat, albeit I think a moderate Democrat in the context of things. And they said that they want Washington State's full compliance with its voter data in terms of giving it to the federal government. They said that means the state's voter registration logs must include the registrant's full name, date of birth, residential address, his or her state driver's license number, or the last four digits of the registrant's social security number, as they say is required under federal elections laws. So that letter came out. The Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs, came out a few days later, said we're reviewing the request, but we have privacy concerns. That was the reason they gave, is we don't want to hand this all this information, like social security numbers, over to the federal government. And so they've so far refused to do that. I had Secretary of State Steve Hobbs on the show on Monday, and I asked him why they were holding out.
I'm just, we're not going to do that because I don't feel secure in doing it. That's number one. Two, it's in conflict of the 1974 Privacy Act. Their request does not meet what the original law is because they gave us the Voting Rights Act. We're referencing that, but nowhere in there does it say that we got to turn over that. Now, I am more than willing to work with the DOJ to turn over whatever data we have that is not restricted. You know, you can still use that data if you want to, but I just not going to turn over all that information.
Yeah, I guess the restricted part confuses me because like all that data you just described, you don't think the federal government has, the social security number is from the federal government. So like you're keeping the social security number from the federal government, which gave us our social security numbers.
Right.
So how
right.
is that actually restricted?
Right. So you're right. They own the Social Security agency. But the thing is like, so you have two conflicting laws, right? And if the law that they're referencing doesn't have any reference to it, and then there's an existing federal law that prohibits me from giving it out, including state law, then I'm probably not going to give it out. Again, though, I'm willing to work with them. I'm not closed-minded about it, or just because, it's a Republican administration, I'm a Democrat, as you know, I didn't get here for cooperating with my party. So I just want to make sure that I'm following the law and there are issues of privacy. And so that's where we're at right now. I'm waiting for them to issue me a summons.
Well, ask and you shall receive. So Assistant Attorney General, United States Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon went on our friend Jason Rant's show yesterday, and she said that summons is coming. The only thing they're waiting for, this is the headline, DOJ to sue Washington over voter roll secrecy after shutdown. We'll see them in court. And Harmeet Dhillon is the Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division, and she was the one who had sent that letter to Washington State. And what she told Jason Rant is basically because of the shutdown, this has been delayed, but she is also confused by the answer that Secretary of State Steve Hobbs is giving about privacy. She told Jason Rantz that makes no sense. Similar to what I told Steve Hobbs. It's like, if the federal government wants somebody's social security number, they'll go find someone's social security number. They own the social security numbers. We got the social security numbers from them. It doesn't make any sense. And so now Washington State is going to be dragged into yet another costly lawsuit while they themselves sue Donald Trump over a whole number of things. Well, we've got all these other pressing issues. Well, and when you could just turn over the data, get some guarantees from them on how the data will be used, etc. I think one of the concerns that some blue states had put forth is that the data would be used by ICE, to which I said, well, if the data could be used by ICE doesn't that mean that there are some concerning individuals on the voter rolls? Because ICE conducts immigration enforcement. And that would be an admission, wouldn't it, that you have some people who aren't citizens voting in our election? None of it makes any sense. It's all just because of Donald Trump, in my opinion. And so now we're going to have to go and have a lawsuit over it. The other thing that came up with my conversation with Secretary of State Steve Hobbs is this issue of, okay, if you have nothing to hide, what's the problem, right? So providing all this data to the federal government would prove Washington State's claims, in theory, that we don't have illegals voting in our election. Now, I don't know. That's what I'll say. I don't know if illegals are voting in our election. Why don't I know? Well, in Washington State, our process is just, what is the Scout's Honor? Is it three fingers? Four?
I don't know.
Scout's
I've never
Honor.
Been a scout.
Scout's Honor that I am, I'm pretty sure it's three. Scout's Honor that I'm in the country legally. That is literally what we do in Washington State. I talked to Secretary Hobbs about it. We're basically asking people to attest through honesty that they're a citizen of this country when they register to vote.
I mean, that's the front end of it, yes. But then the thing is, like, we have caught people that have done it, and there are consequences. So I hope that we don't have that situation. It's sad, but, you know, if they violate the law, they're going to be prosecuted. We have gone after people. We've gone after people that have voted the same election twice. And when I say we, I mean the county prosecutors, because it's county prosecutor function. So it's unfortunate, but that the law is the law. And so, you know, if you get caught, you're going to be probably prosecuted.
The key word there, probably. Probably prosecuted. Well, that's quite concerning. There's a lot of issues there, right? You're saying they have to get caught in order for it to matter. By the time they get caught, is it too late? Have election results been certified? And if so, it's not like you're going to go and undo what has been done. And then again, that's assuming they do prosecute. There's a story right now that came out hours after that interview with Steve Hobbs, where we had that exchange, out of Oregon from the Post-Millennial and our friend Katie Davis Court. Oregon is declining criminal investigation into people who voted illegally because they were in the country illegally and they cast ballots in the state of Oregon. Oregon election officials announced they will not pursue criminal investigations against the dozens of non-citizens who illegally cast ballots in elections in recent years after they were unlawfully registered to vote due to a DMV clerical error. According to a statement from the Oregon Secretary of State, the decision rests on the fact that the non-citizens allegedly did not knowingly violate election laws or were either eligible to vote at the time they did. The Secretary of State's office will not refer anyone for criminal prosecution because the DMV mistakenly registered them to vote. The statement reads, a clerical error at DMV caused these mistaken registrations, not the unlawful actions of any of the people registered, which is interesting because I seem to recall that ignorance of the law is not an excuse. And if you're in the country illegally, you know damn well that you are not supposed to vote. And again, it's not necessarily, and the wider issue being, how did the DMV, a clerical error, illegally register people to vote? My thought is it's probably very similar to Washington State, where it's, oh, automatic thing, getting your driver's license, good for you, register to vote. And in our state, we treat illegals the same that we treat citizens, so you don't have people at the DMV asking, are you in the country legally? So it's just wild. But in the instances where people did vote, so in the state of Oregon, I'll read on in Katie's reporting. This comes after an investigation last year revealed at least 1,863 individuals were unlawfully registered to vote under the Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles. Hundreds of those individuals were determined to be non-citizens. Oregon law allows anyone to obtain a driver's license despite immigration status. An error occurred when DMV staff mistakenly selected U.S. passport or U.S. birth certificate when entering documentation data for individuals applying for driver's license. This error led to non-citizens being added to the voter registration system, and that's motor voter. There are some states where just the act of registering or getting a driver's license automatically registers you to vote. And yeah, I'm supposed to believe it's a mistake that the DMV staffers put, oh yeah, they've got a birth certificate, register them to vote. Absolutely not. So 39, this is key, 39 of the 1,863 individuals who were unlawfully registered, many of whom were non-citizens, cast ballots in elections in recent years, according to the Oregonian. Now, here's the kicker. Election authorities argued that the number of people who voted illegally did not affect the outcome of the election, giving them another excuse to avoid inquiries. So, here's the stages. Illegals aren't voting. Okay, some illegals are voting, but it wasn't their fault. It was the DMV's fault and a clerical error. Some illegals are voting, but they didn't impact the outcome of the election, so we'll just let them get away with it, and we'll move on without fixing the problem. And I will tell you, 39 doesn't sound like a lot in the context of a statewide election. We've had governor's races decided by not very much. We've had a secretary of commissioner of public lands race that was decided by a couple dozen votes. There are local races that have come down to single digits. And so 39 votes absolutely can sway an election. So when we go back to the Secretary of State on our show Monday, suggesting that this is sort of a non-issue, that, you know, doing the common sense thing and just requiring actual proof of citizenship when you register to vote would be the easiest way around it, or, you know, suggesting that, hey, this is all overblown. It's not. We could literally have a situation where a couple dozen illegals voting, because nothing stops them from voting. Let me repeat that. Nothing is standing in the way of an illegal alien in Washington State casting a ballot. Now, there could be consequences on the back end if someone finds out about it, if someone digs, if the information is available. But I would ask you, how will that happen? Because the state of Washington treats illegals no different. It would be the federal government that would have to step in if it gets the data from Washington State and find out probably a year or 2 years down the road that this illegal voted. And then what good does it do? It does no good, and maybe that's the point. Where they can say, oh yeah, but we'll prosecute people who vote illegally, so don't do it. But we might only find out about it after the election results are already certified and after it's too late. And I am not a big believer in the stolen election, bah, 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 and all that stuff, because I think it's actually counterproductive. And it has led to that pushing of the narrative by the right, has led to Republican voters not voting because they literally think that their ballot won't be counted or won't be counted in the way they intended. So I think it's totally counterproductive. But in order to maintain trust in the election system, we have to care this much about flaws in it. We have to care this much about even if it's one instance of someone voting illegally, and that person has to be held accountable, or trust in the system is eroded. The most common sense thing to do that should be supported by everyone, right, left, and center, is to just ask when someone registers to vote for proof that they're a citizen of this country. And there are many ways you can do that. A birth certificate, a U.S. passport, a document of naturalization. Sure, you might have to go through an old trunk and dig it up. Some box somewhere in my garage probably has my birth certificate, but I'll find it if it means that I need it in order to vote. Wild. Again, virtue signaling, hate for Donald Trump over just plain good old common sense. Man, and we're still going to get to our best story of the day on the show today. Wow, we're just jam-packed full of good stuff. All right, our friends at Valentine Roofing can help you with a lot of things, not just roofing. In fact, right now, they can also help you with custom holiday lighting, which I think is so... Look at that! First of all, that's a beautiful house. I understand why they use that picture to display their beautiful holiday lighting. Look at the perfectly spaced bulbs. You think your husband's going to do that? No, not a chance in hell. Look at that. Oh my gosh, that's gorgeous. I love that. That's just so great, because not a lot of people are thinking about replacing their roof this time of year, but custom holiday lighting, 100%. They also, by the way, do flexible financing options if you do need to replace your roof, which I think is always great, because it can be a big expense for home owners. And they do more than roof installs, gutters cleaned or installed, attic insulation, even exterior cleaning, and that custom holiday lighting. Now's a great time for that. You could count on the pros at Valentine, our wonderful newest sponsors to the show. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206 Roofing. Please tell them you heard about them on Undivided. And if you do get custom holiday lights, I want to see them. There's a house by me that always has the best holiday display. I think they need to set music to it. They got like blow-ups in the front yard, and they literally go out there every day and deflate them and reinflate them because they, you know, don't want them rolling around at night.
That's probably just a plug.
Okay, whatever. But still. Anyway, I need to call Valentine for some custom holiday lighting. 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. All right, you've probably seen a bunch of stories this past week about illegal food carts, like outside games and stuff in the stadium, just selling dirty old non-refrigerated meat. Yum. Well, you know, and you know them when you see them, right? You know them when you see them. You're like, I don't see any refrigeration device within 1,000 yards of this guy.
And you still buy it after the game.
I don't.
You've never had a hot dog after the
game. I'm in my hot girl era. Oh yeah, before my hot girl era. Okay. Absolutely. Seattle dog. And you're usually a little tipsy. You're usually really not thinking too much about, was this properly refrigerated? Do they have a permit to sell this food? So this has become this whole ordeal. Everybody's talking about it. But I think the real story here is in government overregulation. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. So this is just fascinating to me. I'm going to play a couple cuts from a King 5 news story. All the credit to King 5. I thought this was a great report. But the part of the report that I think stuck out to a lot of people is really not the part of the report that stands out to me. So, you know, these have been popping up downtown Seattle by the stadiums. And you can tell the difference. You've got like the more, you know, the big food trucks. And then you've got the food carts that are kind of more a tent thing. I mean, we're talking about individuals who literally like flop out a what do you call it? Blacktop.
A grill.
Like a little blacktop.
Yeah.
Yay big. Got it on a stand. And they're just cooking up hot dogs. It's like if you or I went out there, just like popped open our grill, that one that we take to Watershed, and just had my husband out there. And we're like, here, $10 for this hot dog. That's happening quite a bit. So what happens if you get caught? You know, what is the consequence, basically, for running one of these illegal food carts? Here's King.
It's against state law to sell food without a license. In 1974, King County made it so inspectors can write you a $250 ticket for violating this. I asked the county, how much in fines have they collected? Their answer? None.
You're not going to cite them. Yeah, they'll go home, whatever. They'll come right back, and they do it every time.
They said they have not been able to use fines to deter unpermitted mobile food vendors.
Okay, so if you're an unpermitted mobile food vendor, there's really no consequence for you, right? It's like, yeah, they might tell me to go home that day, but they're not sending me a $250 fine. And hell, even if they send me a $250 fine, I probably made enough with my unlicensed food cart outside the stadium to be able to compensate for that. So there's really nothing the state is doing. And they're saying, we found that finding people doesn't really prevent the behavior. Well, yeah, we've figured that out as well. Now, so that's how easy it is to run one of these carts illegally. What does it take to run one of these carts or a food truck legally? Here's King 5.
For this taco truck,
a business like Sergio Garcia's,
that's my book for license,
needs up to 5 licenses or permits.
All this is my license and everything. That's a big book.
To sell food legally.
For my permits.
How much money per year do you pay to follow the law?
Some more than $50,000.
$50,000 in fees, including taxes and insurance.
And these guys, meanwhile,
says nothing, not pay nothing.
That is the problem. The problem is not that the illegal guys don't have to pay anything, or the fines aren't sticking, or the fines aren't being issued. The problem is how difficult the government makes it to run a business legitimately. $50,000. In fine or in fees, likely bookkeeping, insurance to make sure that you can sell hot dogs or tacos outside of one of the stadiums. Is it any wonder in the world that people choose to do it illegally? And that is a theme of really so much of what we've been talking about this week. Now, I would argue for just general deregulation. And it's up to individuals to walk up to one of these things and decide, does that look like it's going to make me sick tomorrow? And if it does, well, they'll know not to go back again. Maybe a little regulation's good. One of those little things that's got a rating for cleanliness, you know, where there's a sad face if it's not clean and a happy face if it's clean. I like that. But that is really the story here. It's not that the government isn't doing enough to shut down the legal carts. It's that the government is doing too much, is asking too much of the people who want to do it legally. There is no way in the world it should cost $50,000 to run a taco truck. There is no reason in the world it should cost $5,000 to run a taco truck in terms of government permits and regulations. And I'll tell you what, if you made it less expensive, less burdensome, less regulated to be able to run one of these, a lot of those people who are doing it illegally would do it legally. Now, there's another issue here that I just have to point out because I don't think some of the news organizations in Seattle are going to notice it, let alone cover it. There's a small clip in this King 5 story that stood out to me.
I think we started out with like three or four that were doing hot dogs. Then pretty soon we got to where they were taking the whole entire block.
Yeah, guys, can't understand what he says, but listen closely. Let's play one more time.
I think we started out with like three or four that were doing hot dogs. Then pretty soon we got to where they were taking the whole entire block.
Started out with three or four hundos. Where have we heard that phrase before? Hondurans. It's short for Hondurans. That's what they call them on the street. We've heard it from our friend Andrea Suarez and other people who are deeply involved with the homeless situation and trying to fix it. And we've heard about them from Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle in the context of Hondos, Hondurans, who are slinging fentanyl on the streets. I think the chances are very, very high that the Hondos that he's talking about there, that guy sells kettle corn outside the stadiums, and he's talking about the Hondos that come in and set up these illegal food carts. I think the chances are very, very high that they are the same Hondos who are connected to the individuals who are dealing fentanyl on our streets, and they are probably in the country illegally. So if we're really concerned about them taking away business from people who are actually licensed to do this and selling food that's making people sick, man, what's a quick way that we might be able to get rid of them? Because the $250 fines aren't working. Well, I think ICE, there's a pretty good chance that if they go down to the stadiums, that some of those people running illegal food carts and getting in the way of the ability of other individuals, many of whom are immigrants themselves, and people of color who are trying to do everything the right way, I guarantee ICE would find people in the country illegally. Oh, but we can't do that. That's mean. So this is how the situation would play out. ICE would go down there. They'd probably find out there's a bunch of illegal Honduran nationals who are slinging, you know, unrefrigerated hot dogs and meat. They arrest them. They send them to the detention center for deportation. And Seattleites lose their minds. Oh my God, how could you do this? Even after weeks of coverage about how these individuals are ruining business for people who are here legally. And by the way, if you get the Hondurans off of the illegal hot dog cart game, I bet you'd also cut down on the Hondurans who are downtown 3rd and Pine and in the Chinatown International District slinging people the fentanyl that they're using to kill themselves. So we can't do it, no? Because what do we start the show with? Virtue signaling. Virtue signaling matters way more. So it's like, okay, like I'm giving you a surefire way to stop this scourge of illegal food carts. One little run through from ICE. The actual vendors down there are saying they're Hondurans. We've heard every DEA agent in Seattle, every SPD narcotics detective knows damn well that this is true. That the Hondurans are in there operating the illegal black markets of stolen goods, of drugs, and even freaking hot dogs. So let ICE, invite ICE, take them down. Can't do that though. Virtue signaling. I like that song. Virtue signaling matters much more. Woo! Unbelievable, you guys. It's unbelievable. Aren't we having fun today? I'm having a great time. Great time. All right, coming up next, Nancy Pelosi announcing her retirement. Not necessarily a surprise. I'll discuss that a little bit. Put on my kumbaya hat for it. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. Not only can they help you navigate the complex world of rules and regulations around owning a rental unit, but they're also down in Olympia advocating on your behalf. Things have been just rough down there with rent control, and it just seems like every time they want to vilify someone, they're vilifying housing providers. And so you really need to have someone on your team advocating for you and for your interests. So become a member of RHA. Help them do that work. RHAWA.org. RHAWA.org. Empowering housing providers is what they do. All right. So I can't say it's a particular surprise. I think she had been alluding to it a little bit. But Nancy Pelosi announced that she's not running for re-election. She put out this video.
I will not be seeking re-election to Congress. With a grateful heart, I look forward to my final year of service as your proud representative.
Yeah. And so the video goes on and it's got all this other imagery about, oh, wonderful. And she talks so much about how San Francisco and how far they've come and, you know, fighting for rights and her fight against the AIDS epidemic and all these other things. And look, I don't blame Nancy Pelosi for in her retirement wanting to celebrate the good things she's done, in her retirement wanting to celebrate her accomplishments. I mean, she ran for office 1 year before I was born. But the thing that bothered me about this video, and I'm not going to spit on Nancy Pelosi's political grave, you know, I mean, I think anyone who signs up to serve usually does it in the beginning for the right reasons. And I'm not going to say that in her career, she hasn't had some significant milestones, some historic achievements. She's the first woman to be Speaker of the House. All that's cool. Like, good for her. I'm sure she's done some stuff to be proud of. But in this video, which I think was like 7 minutes long, she talks so much about how San Francisco is this like gem of the world and how much it's improved since she took office. That's just a lie. It's just a demonstrable lie. And the improvements that you had achieved in like the early 2000s, so many of them as we speak are being undone. You know, this booming tech industry, it's being undone. Tech businesses cannot survive under the crush of regulation and taxes. They're done with the crime and the homelessness and substance abuse, so they're fleeing to places like Texas. And of course, no mention at all about like places like the Tenderloin and San Francisco being one of the worst examples of progressive policies gone awry. So I don't blame her for putting in the video. Like, hell, I wouldn't brag about it. I wouldn't point to that in my video about my retirement either. But I mean, this notion after how old am I, carry the one, carry the two, after like 37 years of service in Congress for the people of San Francisco, the city you serve has by any measurable standard gotten way worse. It is a shell of what it was when you took office in 1987, a shell of what it was. And that's just the truth. And this Scott Wiener guy or whatever, super annoying state politician down there, is poised to run for Congress now in her place. He's even further to the left than she is. And you know what? San Franciscans will elect him, despite the fact like that brand of politics has done that to their city. It's wild to me. It's something I just will never quite be able to wrap my mind around. And also, you know, Nancy Pelosi, again, I don't want to make it a negative, you know, thing about her retiring, because I think it's well past time that she retire. But then, like, she leaves office, and one of the sentiments she wants to have out there is the interview she did on CNN last week, where she's saying Donald Trump is the worst thing on the planet. And just the vitriol that she's instilled in her final years in office into this nation, she's contributed to that divide in such a significant way. So, by all means, enjoy your retirement, you know, enjoy the San Francisco that you've created, but let's not act like you made it a better place. Good Lord. All right, what day is it today? Thursday. Oh, that's right. On Thursday, we check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. And there's a lot going on right now because of the election results in New York City. There's all this talk about, you know, people already fled, have already been fleeing since the pandemic from New York City to the state of Florida. And so the expectation was if Mom Donnie won, that was going to start again in earnest. And it looks like it already is. Let's get to our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Your governor put out a poll asking Floridians, what should our response be to Mom Donnie's election in New York City? Should it be build a Florida border wall, tariff all transplants, or recruit new transplants? Most people say build a Florida border wall.
That's what I voted for. Yes.
Why? Well, why? You don't want New Yorkers New Yorking Florida?
Well, they can come here if they don't come here with any sort of, you know, New York state of mind. But okay. Honestly, until I buy a house, they need to stay out of Florida.
Yeah, I saw this article, the headline from Fox Business, NYC election fears drive $100 million Florida real estate surge as nervous New Yorkers flee south. So in it, they talk to a developer who's the CEO of a Miami-based development company. Says his company has closed more than $100 million in signed contracts from New York buyers in just the past few months, which is twice last year's volume.
Yeah, I mean, I work part of my photography business is in the real estate sector, and my realtors have been waiting for this. They are just so excited because they know they're already putting out these funny memes and stuff on their Instagrams. They know that it's coming, you know, it's inevitable. And the problem is it does drive up prices. It forces locals out. So there's going to be a little bit of both. There's going to be a lot of New Yorkers coming here, but I do foresee a lot of locals moving to places like Texas and the Carolinas because it is just almost unaffordable to own a home, especially in Miami. And the same song is in Tampa, Fort Lauderdale, all the major cities in Florida. It's very difficult to be just normal working family and own a home down here. So there's going to be an exodus and a bunch of people coming at the same time.
Yeah, and we kind of alluded to it, but as we speak, you have offers in on a house. And so two offers on two different houses, trying to figure out which one will give it to you first, basically. So you're like in real time, because I'm sorry, but if I were those home sellers and this were the election result, I would take those homes off the market if I could afford to, and I'd put them back on in 6 months.
For sure. And like, I have been pressing my boyfriend about this because he just kind of is like a blue collar man. He stays out of, the noise of the world. So when I tell him things like this, that we're in like a really great position, but there's a pinch coming because of what's happening in New York, he doesn't really understand it. And now like that it's a reality, I'm like, we need offers on houses. We need to do this right away. And he's kind of understanding. And my realtor kind of told him like, no, we need to make this happen this week. So
yeah, because it's gonna happen fast. And even this developer in this article said that these buyers from New York are getting a lot more aggressive in their offers and their decision making. Like they're like, I'm moving now. I need a place now. All right, let's talk about, since we previewed it, there was a socialist running for mayor of Miami, which she was laughed at. She's like this old white librarian looking lady. And people are like, you do realize there's a bunch of Cubans here who fled communism and they're not going to vote for a socialist. I'm going to guess she didn't win.
She didn't. She did secure about 411 votes, though, as of today.
I guarantee they were all white, college educated Nepo babies who it's the common theme. So Miami's elections are very interesting because they're technically nonpartisan. So that's the same with us. Like people know what the candidate is, but it doesn't say it on the ballot. But also they have to get a majority of votes to win. So you can't, there was like 13 people on the ballot. You can't win with like 45%. So the top two go to an immediate runoff, right?
Yeah. So our top two, they are a Democrat and a Republican.
Yeah, it just doesn't say it on the ballot.
And as much as it is, it doesn't say it on the ballot, and as much as it's nonpartisan, like if you do your research, you know what people are and what they're running for.
Yeah.
And so there was quite a few Republicans on the ballot. So those votes got pretty, divvied out.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting because when I was doing my own little voter math on the election results, it's still looking like the runoff election will be a really close call. And this would be a huge win for Democrats in the state of Florida if they happen, if Eileen Higgins ends up winning, because it's between her and Emilio Gonzalez. Eileen is a commissioner in the city and Emilio was the city manager for a little while. So they both have, experience in Miami and experience with politics here in the city. But it will be interesting I think the runoff election is December 9th. So I'm not sure who's going to win. I would hope that a bunch of Republicans come out and, stake their claim because Miami-Dade County went red for the first time in 40 years last year. So it'd be nice to see it stay that way.
Yeah, there are more registered Democrats in Miami than there are registered Republicans, but your longtime mayor is a Republican. And so they've elected Republicans for a long time. There's this tidbit I didn't realize. It said, should she win, Ms. Higgins, who's a white lady, I think that's important for this context, would become the city's first female mayor. And Miami has not had a Democratic mayor or a non-Hispanic mayor since the 1990s. So Republicans, despite the fact it should be going blue by people based on their registered affiliation, they haven't had a Democrat since the 90s. And since the 90s, it's always been someone of Hispanic with a Hispanic background. And so Emilio, just based on the fact that he's Hispanic and he's a man, he's a Republican. That is really what Miami voters have chosen for 30 years.
Yeah, and I think in a city like Miami, like their Hispanic background plays a huge role in voter turnout for them because, you know, if anybody's been to Miami, you know, like it is predominantly Hispanic people and, you know, Hispanics, like Spanish speaking. And I think that they feel very representative when they have a mayor that falls along that line. So it would be very interesting if Eileen did pull it off.
Yeah, well, I'm sure she'll get the 400 something votes the socialist got, and then, you know, maybe the rest will go to the Republican. So interesting stuff, Miranda. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
I want a house in Florida. One day I will decide. Well, we're always going to live here in some capacity, but maybe a nice place for the winter months in Florida. And you know who I'll get to help sell my home here?
You're going to die somewhere else. Yeah. You don't have to pay the death tax.
I'm not dying here. Absolutely not. And then when I'm ready, I'll reach out to our friend Wes Jones at Sell With Seamless. Yeah. Well, sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. So many 5-star reviews of Wes Jones and Associates. Let's read one, shall we? Mark B says, all I can say is it was a very smooth experience and just what I was hoping for. We had to sell my mom's house and it needed a little bit of prep, new carpet, paint, yard work. None of us live nearby. And Wes, Erica, and the team took care of it all. We got asking price and it sold in the first weekend. That's what Wes Jones and his team at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Can do for you. That is the listing boost concierge service that Mark is talking about there. And basically, Wes can come in, help you decide what cosmetic upgrades are worth the squeeze, so to speak. And then he can even help you, like they needed for their mom's house, manage all of that so you don't have to lift a finger. And that really is just taking so much stress out of the process. So the first thing to do, go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, ask Wes for a market analysis of the area, just get kind of a feel for what's going on in the market and down to the neighborhood and the block. Wes can help you with all of it. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. There's a reason I asked this. When I had Secretary of State Steve Hobbs on the show on Monday, he suggested that the reason for not having a simple citizenship test upon or check upon registration to vote is that it's too difficult. And he brought up, I think, his mother and, oh, people don't have the documents and they're not gonna be able to get them. And it's just a problem. And it's an unnecessary barrier to voting. So I wanted to ask you, is that legitimate? Like, is it legitimate that it would take too much work for people to find a document to prove they're a U.S. citizen? So I asked if required, could you provide your proof of U.S. citizenship in order to vote? Nicole, could you?
Easily.
What document could you all easily of them. Provide?
I have my passport, birth certificate. I have my actual social security card. I got it all.
She's got it all. Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have my birth certificate. I think it's in our safe somewhere so I could locate it. Let's see if people would find it easy. 99% of you saying, yes, I could do that. I even gave you the option of yes, but it would be difficult.
And no one's picking that even.
Literally no one picked it.
Wow.
We had one, well, it's weird because it says 99%, but the other ones, yes, one person picked that. Let's see. Bloom Kitty, if it's a problem for some people, solve that problem. Don't do stupid things like voting on the honor system. Exactly, yeah. Leanne, I had to order a new birth certificate and a copy of my marriage license in order to get my real ID. It's doable. You just need to allow time to get new documents. Yeah, there's so many things that would require you to present a document like that. Voting is so important. I just don't understand why that's not something where you're like, well, yeah, you're going to have to go through the steps to locate it. There's so many options.
To change your name, I guess. To get your marriage license.
I didn't change my name. But I don't remember really the process for getting my marriage license. That's all a blur.
But if you were to change your name, you would have to, so.
Yeah. Sarah said, I got a file with all those documents in it, including my 11-year-old son's passport. I could give it to you whenever you need at a moment's notice. Yeah. Right. Hopefully not to a stranger, of course, but right. I guess. Carlene, I said yes, but I would definitely have some hoops to jump through. So yeah, like I got to locate it, or maybe it's at my mom's house in my mom's basement in a box somewhere. I haven't had to have it forever. But I think, for instance, I needed it for college, but like I was in the Midwest and today, I don't think college students in Seattle have to provide any sort of proof that they're a citizen or any sort of documents whatsoever. Kathy, it was harder for me to get my driver's license in Hawaii because I had been divorced and had to provide divorce papers 30 years later and prove that I'd be remarried, also marriage certificate to my husband, but I was able to get all the paperwork I needed to get a driver's license. If you want to do it, you will make it happen. And I think that's the point that I'm trying to make, is there might be a few people here and there who really would struggle to find their birth certificate or some sort of documentation. But as even the Secretary of State pointed out, now people need real ID to travel. And the only alternatives to that are a document where you would have to come up with one of these documents to prove citizenship. I mean, I got my,
Pre-check.
Not pre-check.
World.
What is it? It's like your global entry.
Oh.
Yeah. And you have to be, you know, I had to, for that, I would have had to prove I was a U.S. citizen. So I don't have a real ID yet, but I have other forms of ID that required far more verification than a real ID. So at some point, people are going to have to do this. It's really not a big deal. Tell them to get their shit together. Go dig out their birth certificate or find a copy of it. It's just stupid. The barriers we create, there don't need to be barriers.
Because we treat people like children all the time.
No, nobody, it's because can be they don't, an adult. It's because they want, and I hate to be this person. When did I become this person? It's because they don't care if illegals vote. That's it. Mm-hmm. They just don't care. They don't care. There's a reason why red states care and blue states don't care. It's because the red states don't think it would benefit them to have illegals voting, and the blue states do. It's really not rocket science. All right, comments from the live stream. Catherine says, hello, just wanted to say I've been busy with my sick pup, but I will be sending you that form. I'm glad you feel better, Brandy. What are you talking about? I don't know, but I'm glad that your sick pup is... I hope your sick pup is okay, and apparently you owe me a form. I don't know what it is, but I'll wait for it eagerly. Todd Welch, I think Miranda probably put that in there thinking I knew what the form was. Todd Welch, cities don't need to suspend operation of Flock cameras, but instead work with the contract with Flock and turn any features that would share without permission off. Exactly. You don't have to totally take the camera system offline. Just suspend whatever data sharing that would do it, which I think is also stupid, but I get it. In our state, sanctuary state, you don't have to take them down.
And by the way, Miranda's not in there. It's me.
Oh, well,
but
Jesus.
I thought you knew.
I have no idea what the form is.
It was probably something we talked about earlier in the
week.
I'm not sure.
Girl Dad times three. Flock is a great system. It has a limited retention period and is only used to find specific license plates while investigating a specific crime. Untold crimes have been solved. Exactly. Derek Bell, that's conspiracy to commit a felony. These politicians need to be charged with felonies immediately. Talking about the Redmond council person who said that basically citizens should disrupt and interfere in ICE arrests and investigations. James Degnan, I call this the thinking of the thin blue line that everyone supposes is in place to protect the citizens. That line we see on the national colors honoring police is growing paler every day as we hear cops like these parroting the idiocy of the city council they function for. They have become not much more than a flunky city council militia instead of protectors of the citizens they allegedly swore to protect. Now, in the case of the Redmond chief, I don't know much about him, but he did tell that city councilwoman, like, No, we're not going to tell citizens to intervene in ICE investigations. What are you talking about? So based on just what I saw, yeah, he probably could have been more forceful in telling them there is literally no purpose and it's damaging to get rid of the Flock system. He does, you know, all these chiefs, they work at the pleasure of politicians. But he did tell them, we're not going to encourage citizens to interfere with ICE. So at least there's that. Let's see. Bill Biz, $20 super chat. City leaders should be prosecuted for intentional obstruction of ICE. If she were to come out and direct citizens, interfere with ICE, then yeah, I think that's problematic. Because you would never do it in any other criminal context. You would never say, go interfere with ICE, they're arresting a burglary suspect. Or go interfere with, it just doesn't make any sense. Go interfere with police in any other context would be very frowned upon. Let's see. On the election results, Cindy says, so many uninformed voters out there. If people actually understood what socialism and communism was, I would think a wise person would not vote that in. Jojo Potato, you're missing the skin pigment aspect in those races. This is a good point. Can you revisit quickly, Nicole, the three graphics for the Seattle races? So Jojo Potato recognized something that I did not see in my confusion over the results in the Seattle City Council. So take a look at the Seattle mayor's race. Wait for Nicole. Sorry, I'm making her go all the way back and pull them up. We'll give you a second, Nicole. It's fine. Bam. All right, so Bruce Harrell's ahead. Note skin pigmentation, okay? Seattle City Attorney race. Erica is ahead. Note skin pigmentation. Let's see, Seattle City Council. Note skin. Now, could be a coincidence, assuming voters knew, but maybe, I think that's a valid theory. Because I'm stumped beyond the KUOW story that painted Katie Wilson as a Nepo baby, that maybe it's Seattle voters deciding that maybe they want to choose people of color. Could be a little bit of both. All right, let's see here. Tanya says, I had a guy this morning still trying to argue that the SAVE Act would keep people from voting and take away rights. This is how little the truth is getting anywhere. Wild. Requiring people to show that they, I mean, it's a law that you have to be a citizen to vote. So I don't understand why it's controversial to have people follow the law. That makes no sense. I don't understand it. I never will. Licensing, the illegal carts, B. Larson, they're even telling groups that you can't have bake sales for fundraisers using baked goods made at home. They will have to come from a licensed food producer.
I've heard that. You can't have big bake sales anymore. I think I heard that about a church bake sale, things like that.
Mm-hmm. The government's lost its mind. And again, I think less regulation overall is probably good. A little bit for the food cart, maybe, making sure it's meat and health code. But at the end of the day, free market's going to weed that out real quick.
Yes.
Yeah, word will spread that you don't eat it at that food truck. You eat it at the other one. Let's see. Mandy, sounds like why people would rather pay a fine for expired tabs versus paying tabs. Yep. 100%. Mm-hmm. Russell Morton, my birthday is tomorrow, Brandy. Will you and Nicole grace me with your fabulous voices? Thank you and love your show. Well, yes.
Brandy got me sick, so I can hardly breathe. Don't but say I'll that clap.
Yet. No. Do you really feel sick?
I mean, I can't breathe out of my nose, but it's okay. I'll be all right. I got a busy weekend. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to will it away.
I feel bad. Yes, I will, Russell, after I read this last comment. Neoskate, hello from Spokane. Thank you for what you do for Washington. I appreciate that. It's nice to hear some life from Spokane once in a while. All right, Russell, I feel like I'm not sick anymore. I'm just I'm suffering from the week of...
You're just willing it away. I'm going to take your
I'm using
will
enthusiasm
it away every day
to pretend.
Because you've done that every day.
Happy. I was going to do happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Russell. Happy birthday to you.
See, I never know where she's going with those, so I couldn't sing along if I wanted to.
couldn't even try. All right, we have some wisdom from Meg and Kelly to close the show. Thank you, Nicole, with our closing sanity check. Now, everybody's going to say that I abuse Nicole, which isn't true, and that I got her sick, which is true, but I could have canceled the shows for the week, and then you guys would have been mad at me. So Nicole took one for the team. I'm a horrible, horrible human being. All right, before we get to our closing sanity check, there's lots of talk of an AI bubble. Stocks just overinflated. Maybe you're like, oh, things have been going well. But what happens when that... air gets let out of the market? Are you confident with how your retirement portfolio is positioned right now? Are you confident in the risk exposure? Join Bulwark Capital, Zach Abraham, for his preview live webinar, November 20th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. I cannot believe it's already November. What in the world? It will be Bulwark's final webinar of the year. And in it, they'll discuss the impacts AI is having on the market, preview for 2026, and how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios. Plus, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. Register now for their free November 20th webinar, and then schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review. And while you're there, subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I feel every single word of this so hard. And I think I've said some sort of version of this, but Republicans just need to get their shit together. They really do. And I always get yelled at by some of the tried and true Republicans. Brandy, you're not even a member of the party. Stop telling us what to do and pretending that you speak for us. I don't speak for anyone. I speak for myself and myself only. But, you know, I do political commentary and I do notice some things that the Republican Party just really sucks at. I think its ground game is generally horrible. And I also think Republicans like to fight with each other way more than Democrats like to fight with each other. Here's what Megyn Kelly had to say about that on her show.
The Republican Party needs to get its shit together. ASAP. The Republicans like to lose. They enjoy losing. They enjoy when they are embattled and in a losing position and complaining. They love it. They do it really well. Less good at winning, especially when Donald Trump is not there to get them over the line. The Republican Party is not strong. Donald Trump is strong. Republicans don't know how to win. They don't know who to run. They don't know what to do when he's not, when daddy's not there to fly them across the finish line. And that's just been so obvious. Meanwhile, Trump is all over the Middle East while people's groceries bills are still high. They're still dealing with inflation. They're suffering. Like, that's it. Okay. We're focused on domestic policy and on making people's lives better.
100%. I absolutely believe that there is a segment of the right that has made losing a personality trait. And it is, it gives them a reason to be angsty. It gives them a reason to complain. They almost love it. And you know what? We've done too much winning to go back now. Too much winning in this country. And I'll be damned if we let the socialists take things over. So get your shit together. Stop complaining. Improve your ground game. If you don't like the direction of things, go out today and do something about it rather than just whining on the internet or whining on a podcast that you host. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. I guess I also have to take my own advice. What am I going to do today to improve the situation besides whining on my show?
Take a nap.
Think about that. Take a nap. I guess. Thanks for sticking with us throughout the week. I know my voice was real rocky the first few days, but I just couldn't abandon you guys. We can't just take a whole week off. Nicole got sick for the cause, allegedly.
Allegedly.
I don't know. She also traveled this past weekend. I would like to believe she got sick somewhere else. Not the most obvious place. Somewhere else.
Could have
been. And I'll stand by that unless she proves otherwise. All right, subscribers, we'll see you Sunday. The rest of you who don't subscribe, shame on you, but I guess we still love you and we'll see you Monday.